Introduce ourselves and folks over there also. And I'll start with me. I'm David Carter. I'm the chairman of the Transylvania County Advisory Committee. I'm a retired law enforcement officer.
I'm Howard Vanek. Most know me as Howie. I'm on the Transportation Advisory Committee and responsible as a pedestrian and bicycle advocate. Recently, it was my first meeting tonight.
Mark Julian.
John McCall, TAC.
Keith Wilmot, TAC.
I'm Kate Hayes. I'm the interim planner. And while we're on me, I'll let our new planner introduce herself.
My name is Darby Terrell. I'm the new planner for Transylvania County.
Vicki Eastland, Lambiscott Rural Planning Organization.
Steve Williams, NCDOT Division 14.
Jason Stewart, Planning Director.
Matt Morrow, I'm substituting for Aaron tonight, representing the City of Orleans.
Deidre Allison, I'm on the planning board.
Lauren Wise, on planning.
Rick Lassen, with planning.
And Bob Jimmy.
Kenzie Jackson, planning.
And I'm Sandy Watson, planning board.
And two gentlemen here.
Lonnie Watkins, NCDOT, Division 14.
Troy Wilson, NCDOT, Division 14.
And we're glad you all in the audience there are here. There's some other people from transportation and around that are here that we're glad you all are here. And I think this will be fairly informative once we get a couple things out of the way. Number one, the Transylvania County Transportation Advisory Council Committee. We need to approve our agenda for tonight. Your motion that we approve the agenda, which you received.
So moved.
Second. All in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
And I'll interrupt just a minute. Another one of our members is here. Richard Howe.
Hi. Foggy up in the mountain.
And we have the meetings of October 9th, the Transylvania Advisory Committee. They came in the mail. Do I hear a motion that we approve the minutes? So moved. Second. Anybody, any changes they need to take in? If not, all in favor say aye.
Okay.
Okay, we will go to old business of the Transylvania County Transportation Advisory Committee, and that will be an update on the CTP of Transylvania County.
CTP is a Comprehensive Transportation Plan, for those of you who are not familiar with that acronym. And what that is a plan. We work with NCDOT, our partners here at the division, and also some technical assistance from Raleigh. And it updates all aspects of transportation. It's highway projects, bicycle pedestrian projects, public transit, rail, in the case that we had rail, but that's not a consideration so much in this plan this go around. It looks it's a 30-year plan, so we're looking out into the future 30 years. I don't want to call it a wish list. It's right now we're in the process of finishing up, hopefully soon wrapping up, identifying the highway deficiencies based on a number of safety and volume criteria, and we're going to start moving into the alternate modes of bike, ped, and transit. So our next meeting is February 14th. I'm sorry, is that correct? I think it's the 14th. I just want to make sure. It's the second Tuesday of February. 11th, I'm sorry, February 11th. I was looking at my January calendar. It's February 11th, and it is at 3 o'clock, and we hold it over here at the Board of Elections. So there's a number of folks here at this table that are on that committee as well. So that's really kind of...
And SDIP was did presentation by Steve Williams and Vicki.
And Troy Wilson. We're going to pull Troy in since we've all done this.
We made him pull Lonnie.
Projecting behind you guys. Sorry about that. It's not projecting up here. I know the older members, well, I shouldn't say older, the members, people who have been on the TAC for a while have seen this similar presentation a couple of times, but in order for the process to be transparent, sometimes it's a little difficult to understand, or there's just a lot of pieces to it. So it never helps to review, and certainly we have people in here that have never seen this before. The State Transportation Investment Law passed in 2013, and the goal of that was to take the decision-making for transportation projects out of the proverbial, you know, dark, smoky room and make it a data-driven process. So the ultimate goal is to prioritize and match those priorities to funding. There's three different tiers or three different buckets of funding. There's a statewide mobility. Think of those projects, well, statewide projects. So mainly interstate projects, something that connects statewide. There are a few NC routes and US routes that are eligible for that pot. Regional need projects, regional impact projects. Think of US routes, NC routes, like 276, 280, 64 here in Transylvania County. And then everything else is in the division needs tier. Remember these buckets, because we're going to get to them several different times to talk about them a little bit more depth. Ultimately, we're trying to get a state transportation improvement program. This is a cover page for the most recent one. Even though it says 2019, it's actually fiscal year 2020 to 2029. And that was passed in or adopted in the fall of last year. This is a typically a two-year cycle, and we'll get into some changes in that too in just a minute. How does the State Transportation Improvement Program, how is it funded? If you think of a dollar bill, 50 cents of that comes from your motor fuel tax, 30% comes from your Department of Motor Vehicle fees, and 20% comes from your highway use tax. Highway use tax, of course, is a tax on new vehicles. DMV fees are licenses and tags, and then, of course, motor fuel tax. Those are broken into two different funds, your highway fund and your highway trust fund. You see the percentages there that go into each fund. Highway fund covers your maintenance and operation expenses, and the highway trust fund are your revenues, your capital expenses, which is what State Transportation Investment Law comes from, or State Transportation Improvement Program. The legislature dictates how those funds in the highway fund are allocated, so all your maintenance and operation fees. And highway trust fund is statutory directed, which the State Transportation Investment Law directs that. And that also includes the federal aid match. Just breaking that down quickly, if you remember, the highway fund was the operation maintenance fund, so you see the large portion of that goes to maintaining our road facilities, and that is multimodal facilities. The Highway Trust Fund, as we just talked about, the State Transportation Investment, that's the main chunk that comes out of that. And like I said earlier, federal aid is also included in this, that Highway Trust Fund. Just a quick view of how that's projected to increase, those funds to increase, starting in 2019, going up to 2029, since the STIP does cover a 10-year period. You'll notice the federal, the orange on the bottom, flat lines, and that's just because we don't. There hasn't been a new highway expenditure bill passed the federal government, so we don't know exactly what's going to happen there. And of course, motor fuel tax. We're not real sure what's going to happen there, since electric vehicles are coming online more and more. Our legislature's aware of that, and they're working on that continuously to try and figure out a better way than that motor fuel tax. So we have a piggy bank that belongs to the STIP. It's kind of a pictorial representation of what happens there. Our gas tax, like we said, DMV fees, new car tax, and our federal monies as well. How that gets spent. So coming out of that piggy bank immediately are the toll road system, gap funding, just making up the gap in funding between what a local municipality can donate to that, and just trying to bridge that gap in funds. Different operating expenses off the top, as far as like your transportation planning branch, which does a lot of our forecasts and such for our program delivery. There's a bonus allocation. Troy had to help me out with this today. This refers to a municipality can put money into a project, and it actually helps the score of that project quite a bit, cost-benefit analysis. And then they can get that back in a later project, in another project. So it's a bonus allocation that goes back to that a project that benefits that municipality. We have cost overruns, of course. Projects are always more expensive than what we anticipate, whether it's just because there was a low estimate to start with or inflation. These are projects, I say cost overruns and inflation, these would be projects that are already out there being constructed. And we have debt service that relates more to storm debt service and such that we have to pay back to the general fund. And transition projects, you'll see that term in here a few times too. That's projects that were in the works prior to the STI law in 2013. Of course, the number of those projects is directly shrinking. So all that comes out first out of the state transportation, the piggy bank for the state transportation improvement program. There's our buckets again. After all that comes out, you have 40% that goes into the statewide mobility tier, 30% that goes into the regional impact tier, and 30% that goes into the division needs tier. Our buckets keep coming back. Statewide mobility. There's just one bucket for that. It's not divided up into regions in the state or anything. So, again, those are our projects that span the whole state, mainly the interstate projects. And the first thing that comes out of that bucket, interstate maintenance, bridge replacement, highway safety, and committed projects, previously committed projects. Regional impact, there's six regions in the state. Two NCDOT, there's 14 NCDOT divisions, and there's two divisions per region. So we're like Division 14 that we're in is lumped in with Division 13.
And we are Region G.
Region G, the very last one, of course. Again, the first thing that comes out of this pot, bridge replacement, highway safety, and funding previously committed projects. Division needs, there's 14 NCDOT divisions across the state. Again, there's a chunk of stuff that comes out before we ever even get to new projects. So bridge replacement, highway safety, state surface transportation block grant programs, highways, etc. And then, after all that, after we pull all that money out of those buckets first, then we have money left over for the projects that are going into prioritization. This is going to look familiar. The blue is just our blue bucket. Just wanted to have this in here. Again, the 40% funds goes to statewide mobility. Statewide projects are 100% data-driven. There's no local input that goes into statewide projects. Regional impact, 30% of that score is local input. So 70% is data-driven. There's criteria for those data, which we'll get to in just a minute. Division needs, that goes to 50% local input, 50% quantitative score. An important thing here is a project that's not funded in statewide mobility. So if we submitted a project, we don't have any statewide mobility projects in Transylvania County, but if a statewide mobility project was submitted, it did not get funded, it can cascade down to the regional tier. Likewise, anything in the regional tier can impact, can cascade down to division needs. The disadvantage there is obviously statewide mobility projects tend to take up a lot of money. You know, let's think I-26 in Henderson County right now. If that were to cascade down to regional impact tier to be funded, it would just eat up all the funds in that tier. Same thing if something cascades down to division needs tier. Mentioned criteria just a few minutes ago. And this round of prioritization is called P6. This is our sixth round of prioritization. It actually started at P3, so there's a little bit of discrepancy there, but we are on the sixth round. And this is new. There is a work group that's assigned to modifying this process or improving this process. Vicki actually serves on that work group. And before, all projects were scored under mobility criteria. And mobility criteria, you can see on the statewide mobility and the regional impact, was very congestion driven. These have actually changed a little bit too from the previous round of prioritization, but you can see congestion's up there fairly high. We don't have much congestion in the western part of the state compared to Raleigh or Charlotte. So our projects weren't scoring very well.
You've got the modernization criteria.
Yeah. So this is the criteria that had been using. Thanks, Vicki. So this is, there's two different sets of criteria now. There's a modernization, which I'm showing here. And you'll see at the division needs level, there is no congestion anymore. So we can score projects either under this modernization, which we anticipate our roads will score much better, as opposed to, the next slide, this is the mobility criteria. And you can see there that the congestion jumped a lot for the statewide mobility, 20% at the regional impact tier, and 15% at the division needs. That congestion score and previous rounds of SPOT were making our project score quite low. So we'll be scoring projects both under both these criteria to see which way they score best, and we anticipate under the modernization. So that was a big win for rural areas, that new scoring criteria. You'll see that the local input there hasn't changed from previous rounds. No local input at statewide mobility, 30% at the regional impact, and 50% at the division needs. And those local input points are divided between the planning organization that Vicki represents has a board, and they decide how to assign their points, and certainly Transylvania County TAC is instrumental in directing how those points are assigned. And then half the points come from the division engineer. Of course, it behooves us to coordinate again to maximize our local input points. It's very seldom that our local input points don't align with the RPO's local input points. Quick overview of the project. Project submittals, which we're right in the beginning of right now, and that's what Vicki's going to be talking about. Those projects get scored to develop that quantitative score. The statewide projects come out first, a list of statewide projects that are funded. And then we kind of go through the process again for our regional tier projects. They're scored, and those lists of those projects come out. And then it's wash, rinse, and repeat. We'll do it again for the division needs. And we have to do it in these stages because, if you remember, projects can cascade from one tier down to another, to the next. And then ultimately we're trying to generate that STIP. And this slide was for that STIP that we just released last year, 2020-29 STIP. Kind of a recap of what goes into the STIP. We have the exempt programs, which are really all of the old projects that were in the works before we ever adopted this new prioritization plan. Alternate criteria projects, there's things on military bases. There's congestion management, air quality projects for non-attainment areas, and a few different projects like that. And then this should start looking familiar. We have the blue bucket, statewide mobility projects, regional impact projects, and division of these projects. For the 2029 STIP, just really quickly, there's 1,833 projects. Of course, most of those are highway. And just a graphical representation of that. Number of projects, you'll see, as far as number goes, 70% about for highway, 30% non-highway.
Can we stop right there just a second?
Sure.
I want to put some. I'm going to input some details here. The STI law, one of the parts of the law mandated that 90% of the funding go to highway projects, 4% goes to alternate modes, and that's all your other modes: rail, public transit, bike ped, ferry, aviation. And then there's 6% that they just throw into the pot, and the remaining, that remaining 6% is just programmed based on project score. So the number of projects is higher, but the percent, they had to get the funding percentages to line up to meet those laws. So that's, it's, there you go, highway 90, non-highway 10%. So that's how those are attained. And they program the 4% of alternate modes first, then they program highway, then they come back and do the remaining 6%. That's called the normalization.
Good question. The green on the left says bike and ped.
Yes.
And I assume that highway also includes a lot of changes that would in
yes.
be like a
yes.
bike way.
There are incidental bike ped projects included in many highway projects right. that you don't see the funding in the bike ped category.
That's the standalone bike ped.
Yeah. Yeah. Those, that 14% is for, like, we want a greenway, we want a sidewalk, and there's nothing else going on.
In the aviation, what's DOT doing in that? I mean, what's the emphasis in the aviation part?
There, it's really hard to explain. Asheville is one of six. Is it class one? Or there's a certain, they're one of the higher performing, I'll just call it, airports in the state. So they qualify for funding in statewide, regional, and division. And they have gotten funding up here at Asheville before in previous rounds at the regional impact tier. But they've determined that the way the STIP is made up, it's a 10-year document. They put in for a vehicle replacement, runway maintenance vehicle replacement. And it was funded 7 or 8 years out, and they actually needed it much earlier. So the money they're getting from Federal Aviation, it works easier for them to work with. But DOT does invest in a lot of the smaller airports, and they do runway extensions, they do clear zones, safe zones at the end of runway, working with a roadway project. They've done hangar extensions. I mean, for some of the smaller airports benefit more than the larger ones do, if that makes any sense. At all.
There's a whole different set of scoring criteria for aviation yeah. projects, and it's really based on the size of the airport,
mm-hmm.
and the number of vehicles that it's serving.
But each different type of mode of transportation, rail, ferry, public transit, bike ped, aviation, highway, you all have different criteria. You're not all competing under the same criteria, just to kind of clear that up for you. But anyway, I didn't mean to get Steve off track there. I just wanted to.
No, I'm losing my voice. So
yeah, I thought you needed a break.
Yeah, this stuff gets me all choked up.
Lose sleep over this, don't we?
Just real quick, funding distribution by the division. You see the average there. Like we said, we're Division 14, so it looks like we're well below average. But
that's funded projects. In the
funded state. Projects, yeah. But if you look at the expenditure per capita, we're actually above average. Okay. So on that previous slide, I don't know if I can go back. So you see, like, Division 5, that's Wake County, that's down in Raleigh. So that, you know, a lot of expenditure there. Division 10 is the Charlotte area. But it all kind of comes out that we, per capita, we actually do fairly well in our projects. And that's all that I have. Like I said, Vicky's with Land of Sky RPO. Troy Wilson is my counterpart in Division 14 as far as on the planning side. So if you have any questions on any of this stuff.
Don't ask Steve. He's about to lose his voice.
Yeah. Can't take it anymore. I'm going to cry. Are there any questions while all of us are here? I know that made it just clear as mud.
I would imagine that with all the hurricane damage on the coast and all that, a lot of DOT funds associated with the areas and all that are probably significant right now.
Go ahead. You know, you go ahead.
So, yeah, there's not really for storm damage stuff, and it doesn't matter if it's, you know, ferries that get damaged, or that's a whole separate funding source, but it does hurt our bottom line. Most of that is reimbursable from the federal government, but it takes, like we've just recently gotten our final payout from Francis Ivan, which was 2004, is that right?
Takes a minute.
Yeah, so, and we have to cover those expenditures for quite some time, and that was actually one of those slides is something that comes out of the SCIP at the very top. And that's hurting us right now for, with storms and such, the payouts we had to have our state transportation investment program. We're really having to scale back on our projects, and we'll get into that when we get to our projects updates as far as projects that have had to be delayed because of a lot of those expenditures.
What kind of impact is the MAP Act settlement going to
have? Right now, I think we're expecting it to be right about $1 billion. MAP Act, for those that don't know, it was a way for DOT to essentially, it was restricting development or restricting anything that you could do to a property along corridors that DOT knew that they were going to have projects on in the future. The intent was to not have those properties developed and then cost a whole lot more to purchase those properties. But basically, we were restricting people's use of that property, which was determined unconstitutional. Unfortunately, the MAP Act property, and these corridors were mainly around Raleigh and such, big corridors. The estimated right-of-way cost initially would have been about $100 million, and we're going to wind up paying about $1 billion just because of legal fees and penalties. So, and that is coming out too. That's hurting with the state transportation improvement program tremendously. That and storm expenditures up until 2016, I think the figure was about $62 million a year average. Now it's $222 million. It's been up to $300 million. Last year it was $300 million. So yeah, all that kind of is combining to really impact the number of projects that we can deliver.
Thank you much. I think one thing it's plain to everybody is that it is a process and a long process. And one of the reasons it is a long process when you are dealing with the amounts of money and funds that it takes on these projects, you don't want to make a mistake on them, and which had been in the past. And this will help it. It might be slow, but it makes it. Make sure that the money's spent the right way.
And at the wishes of the local municipalities, too. There's just a lot more local input now than there was before.
Anybody on the committee have any more old business? I don't see any on the agenda. So if not, we'll go to new business, the bike plant update.
We were going to have our group together.
Oh, okay. We're going to do some more stuff.
Okay.
Everybody's got a big sheet in front of you. Steve, myself, Troy, Lonnie, and a number of folks. Mac was there. David was there. Some other. Mark, were you with the fires? Okay. A number of folks from the county. Jason was there. April and Kate were both there, and some folks from Brevard got together, and we talked about. Remember in Steve's presentation, the first step in this process is submitting projects. So right now we are working to submit projects, and the way that Transylvania County in the past has handled project submittal is, we come together and develop the list, and then Mr. Carter and the planning folks draft a letter and send it to the commissioners. Recommending a list of priority projects to be submitted. The commissioners vote on it, and also the City of Brevard Council vote on it there. And then that comes to me at the Landeskog RPO, and my board votes on it. Because the RPO has the final say on the projects that get submitted. And Landeskog RPO represents counties of Transylvania, rural areas of Haywood, Buncombe, and Madison County. So Landeskog RPO has 16 projects per mode to submit. So I've got 16 highway projects, 16 bike ped projects, 16 public transit, 16 rail, and 16 ferry projects. I try to negotiate with the coast, and they just don't want to, they don't want to take my ferry projects. But anyway, so we sat down with a group of folks a couple of months ago. It was November. And we talked about projects that had gone through the process previously, and we discussed some new projects also. And this list, you see over to the left, it says TECO 1, 2, 3, 4. This is the order from number 1 all the way through, bearing in mind I have 16 projects. Not all these projects will make it to the final submittal, but this was the order that these projects were prioritized in at that meeting in November. So we can talk about these. You all can take a look at them and ask questions about them, however you want to handle it. But as a, I guess, a deliverable, I need kind of to make sure we're still on the same page with these projects. This is just the highway projects. I'll be working with Jason and his folks and Brevard and Rosman folks to see what bike ped projects they might want to submit. But these are the highway projects, and those are the ones we're talking about this evening.
Keep in mind, too, that the division has 14 submittals, but that's division-wide. So
that's 10 counties.
Yeah, for 10 counties.
So if I...
There's a couple of overflows.
Yeah.
And we'll be able to submit some.
I'm thinking I might get in the neighborhood of 8 or 9 of these submitted, and then maybe the division can submit 1 or 2. So... I mean, I'll just run down them. I mean, if you haven't seen these lists in the past, they might not be kind of a foreign language to you. But the number one priority at, for the last couple of rounds has been NC 280. North of, I'll read it to you, the northern termini of R5799. Now, how many of you know what that is? It's the Taco Bell, because that will be where the intersection improvement project that is planned and going to construction in a couple of years will end. So from that point north to the North Transylvania Fire Department, we're proposing convert that four-lane undivided road to a four-lane divided with a median, and including that would include, as the Transylvania County Bike Plan called for, it would include a shared use path adjacent. And the number two project is,
can
yes.
Can you talk about real quick the change in funding if those bike plans are in?
Yes. Do you want to talk about complete streets?
Just to
okay.
mention.
This fall, NCDOT and state legislature adopted a new plan, it's called Complete Streets. And what that plan states is, as NCDOT is constructing a highway project, if a county or municipality has an adopted local plan that includes bicycle or pedestrian accommodations, it will be constructed at NCDOT's cost during the construction of that roadway project. So if there's a, well, that project, should that project get funded and the Transylvania County Bike Plan calls for that shared use path, it would be constructed during that roadway project.
And that's a change from our old complete streets policy where there was a cost match.
Yes.
And unfortunately, the existing projects that are in Transylvania County are grandfathered in under the old rules, so that cost match still applies.
Yeah, but because this new policy was adopted this fall, and those projects were funded 4 years ago.
Anything new?
Correct.
If it's in the bicycle plan, it will...
Or pedestrian plan.
Definitely.
Yes.
So it'll be covered as part of the NCDOT payment, and we don't have to match.
Which is why in the CTP I have postponed dealing with bike ped and transit, because I wanted to get the roadway deficiencies identified, and then we will match up the roadway deficiencies with the adopted plans and see where we had gaps.
And just to be clear, it has to be incidental to the roadway project. So
right.
Standalone
yes.
bike ped projects
yes.
don't
right.
They don't
right.
count yet. Maybe someday.
Maybe someday. But yeah, right now standalone is still the local match. So
it's still been beneficial too because of the pedestrian bridge across the David River that's getting ready to be built. It's 80/20 deal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We could have done it for that.
Okay. Yeah. All right, the next project, is that, did I cover it?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Is US 64. Folks, you're familiar with the 64 project going over to Jackson County that has just wrapped, just completed, right?
Yeah.
It's been wrapped up. This is another section of that. It's from Indian Creek to Flat Creek Valley Road. It's just a continuation of that project. That was the number two priority.
Was that not a transitional project?
It was not funded. It was not. That section is not funded for construction. So while the document is almost complete, it wasn't funded for construction. It would have been good.
Yeah, Mark, that one kind of got wrapped up. It was right there when they passed the new state transportation investment law in 2013, and we were directed to stop work on all projects until that law was enacted, and that one was one of those that got wrapped up in that.
You may be thinking carryover project, because a project that's in a sibling of a funded project, which that one is, automatically carries over. I don't have to use a submittal to put it in. So it is a carryover project. Correct? So that one actually...
So it's already got a number.
So it's in there, and that's my...
We left the numbers off. Open.
Yeah, sorry, that was my bad. I shouldn't. That one's already in there.
Vicki, do you know the approximate length of that one?
Mile and a half, I think.
I mean, it's just shy of two, I think.
Just shy of two.
Okay. It's actually the Flat Creek Valley does a loop, and it's the furthest one toward
the
Rossman.
West. The, yeah. right. the furthest one toward Rossman.
Right.
Right. Yeah, not so that would be toward that TC, near TC Henderson.
Yes.
Really toward school.
Yeah.
So you're talking about from the ending of the new section of the road all the way down to TC Henderson.
Right. Mm-hmm. Very close to it. Okay.
And the number three priority was Railroad Avenue Extension. It was formerly called the West Loop, which is a connector road on the west side of Brevard to help ease some of the congestion on 64. It's two-lane. It'd be improve existing and some part on new location, but it's a two-lane roadway with bicycle pedestrian accommodations and turn lanes at key locations, key intersections. And the fourth was Neely Road from...
Can we go back to Railroad Avenue Extension?
Certainly.
Something, is this Railroad Avenue in downtown Brevard?
Mm-hmm.
And you would come up to Probart?
The northern termini, it would come off of Asheville Highway up near Chestnut. Mm-hmm. And that would be part of a new location. And there's not a determined path yet. Connect up with Railroad Avenue,
mm-hmm.
continue down Probart Street, down to Mill Avenue. Mill, is that correct?
Not sure, not Probart, Railroad.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Railroad, but it goes through the Probart intersection, crosses down to the Rosenwald community.
Yeah.
And picks back up on Cassius.
I don't know how you could do that. It's all private land. Crossing over Probart.
Yeah. Brand new house.
Not a fan.
They've been talking about this bypass for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
They've looked at every different way around. They even looked at the floodplain going through the French Broad River back out that way.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes right through my backyard.
This isn't a bypass. It's a neighborhood street.
Yeah, improving connectivity to those neighborhoods there.
I drive that pretty much every day, and I don't see how that could get up to ranking number 3.
Oh, these aren't rankings.
These are what the county group, the TCC and TAC members of the Transylvania Brevard got together and looked at this list, and that was the city of Brevard's project they wanted in that slot.
I wonder how long ago they thought of that, because if I look at it today, I just couldn't see how that would be a major thing. It would be a huge disruptor for very little benefit or gain. Yeah. And frankly, most of the neighbors would nix it. They would you'd have a big fight for putting anything through that. So the cost, especially now, that the values of the homes are going up in that area, we're seeing a big resurgence in the area. I think the cost just to buy out the land and to put it through, seriously, just from evaluation.
I see. Yeah. That's going to be... I'll have to defer to you on that one.
Yeah, there's no doubt it'll be... an issue needs to be talked about, but from all the traffic studies we've seen, it plays a role.
I mean, I go through this again. Let me know how I can add a little bit more current knowledge to that. But I mean, the major intersection there, which is Probart and Railroad,
mm-hmm.
it's not a busy intersection. You know, so the need for
It's a connect. The purpose of the project is not to relieve Probart or Railroad. It's more of a neighborhood connector project. Instead of folks having to go down Asheville Highway and cut back through and try to, it's to get some of the folks that are just going to that area off of Asheville Highway. They initially wanted it up to Osborne, but they pulled it down to Chestnut. Because of some of the impacts.
It actually has some really good features on the Nicholson Creek side.
Mm-hmm.
The real sticker is right what you're talking about. It's mm-hmm. the intersection of Main Street
mm-hmm.
and Probart. But, yeah.
Yeah, but as far as the way that it goes now, Railroad, you make your left on Probart, you right on Oak Lawn, and then you come down Carter.
And this takes all that out. Yeah.
Could also help the track around middle school.
Yeah, that's good. Getting traffic around the bar. It's not going to be a popular thing in the neighborhood, I know that.
Because I'll be one of the ones that will be objecting to it.
That's fine.
Yeah.
We understand that.
When we prioritize these, do we look at potential costs?
Yes.
So a really expensive project, such as arguably this would
we don't have final costs. I had sort of costs on some of these projects, but not all of them. So because I didn't have good costs on all of them, I didn't even use the cost on here.
Okay.
Because it wouldn't have been a fair consideration. Because I didn't have all the numbers on
you. Go to and all that stuff.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah.
Well, but the community would be, frankly, you know, a bike path going through there, I think the community's going to go for it.
Well, the bike path is going through there. It'll be there this year.
Perfect.
But the road was identified in 2005, I think, maybe.
It was in the 1990s.
Or
it was in the Brevard Thoroughfare Plan in the 1990s.
That's why I'm getting at. It's like how long ago? So if
it was identified then.
Yeah, 15, 20 years ago.
But
completely different animal.
In the 2002 land use plan, it was projected to cost about $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no building. There's only one building in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I think it would be worth doing an assessment of just looking at the traffic pattern that's going through there. Mm-hmm. And
there's actually a feasibility study underway.
There's a whole bunch of stuff
that
you need to look at.
Okay.
You know, before you say no. Looks good for the whole community at the station. So. And that's always a struggle.
Understood.
Okay. Good. All right, the fourth one was Neely, and that one will go from 64 all the way down to 276, and that would be a modernization project. It would include adding curb and gutter and bike lane and sidewalk along that corridor and addressing some of the misaligned intersections and confusing intersections. And then number five would be Everett Farm Road from Crab Creek to Old 64. As a modernization, be upgrading the roadway. This description is old, and I apologize. I should have changed it. It would be upgrading the roadway and getting the lane widths to current DOT standard, and also adding a minimum of a 4-foot paved shoulder for bicycles. I believe that one is in the bike zone as well. Mm-hmm. And number six is Old 64. From Chestnut to Acosta, also a modernization project. It would include getting the lane widths to current DOT standards. And I believe that one has a multi-use path adjacent to that one. So that would be part of the project. Also, we would put probably turn lanes at some of the more congested intersections along that roadway.
Vicki, can that one be modified at this point?
They can. Anything can happen.
Can that go from 64 instead of from Chestnut?
Yeah.
Because you're leaving a little section out.
Yeah, it should be from 64. I apologize. Yes. That was one of the edits that needed to be made. Thank you.
That's the old description.
Yeah, that's the old description.
Yeah, I think we went through this last
time. We did. Yep. And then Acosta from US 64 there at the Lowe's over to Old 64. And there's a funded project right now on Wilson to do improvements to Wilson Road. And one of the features of that project, the Wilson Road Improvement Project, is it's going to realign that offset intersection of Acosta and Wilson. It's going to bring the Wilson Road connection north to align with Acosta with a one-lane roundabout. Mm-hmm. So that'll take care of a lot of problem right there on Old 64.
Yeah, and just adding a shoulder basically between the Transylvania County Parks and Rec area
mm-hmm.
over to that intersection would be good because you've got the bike path on one side already over 64.
Yeah, that would, it's modernization. I think it'd be curb and gutter and there would be some new turn lanes and there would be improving the bike path because the current crossing of the bike path is in a somewhat dangerous location. So it would improve, it would upgrade the path and I think it would continue it on down
Yeah. But it's a connection from the bike path to get over to Wilson Road.
Right.
And that is...
I think the bike path would actually continue down to through that intersection, and Wilson Road is going to have 5-foot bike lanes. So then you would have bike path and then the 5-foot lanes on Wilson, so you'd have a continuation.
Perfect. That's an important corridor.
Yes, it is. I think it's going to become more and more stressed as the improvements to Wilson and the Davison River connector. I think Acosta is going to start seeing a lot more stuff go on there.
Good.
And then we have US 276 from Parkview. I'm sorry. This is the intersection of US 276, Parkview Drive, and Elm Bend. It will be an intersection improvement project to improve that kind of very complicated offset leg of Elm Bend and in there. Now, number nine is kind of confusing. It's called Improved Multiple Intersections Along Corridor, but it's probably going to be more of a modernization project. There's three options here. This is basically improving from the southern end, or the bridges across Davison River, that have no shoulders. So it'd be starting at the bridges at Davidson River, replacing those bridges, improving the intersection at Acosta and 64. And this project calls for it to go down to the new intersection of the Davidson River connector that's going to be opened up in next year. So this would be a short project. And then there's another project that would go from the new intersection of Davidson River connector down to Fortune Cove Road, which is Food Matters, where the existing median ends. And that would be a project to improve those intersections along that corridor. I know there's been a significant number of crashes at Hospital Drive and also at Morris. It would be improving those intersections, and it would be constructing either an adjacent path or bike lane and sidewalk, depending on what the City of Brevard's plan calls for. So it would be improving the corridor, making the intersection safer and more mobile, and adding whatever the called for bicycle pedestrian accommodation would be. So there's the option of either submitting those two shorter versions, or the first project on the back page is the entire corridor from the bridges to Fortune Cove Road. So we broke it up into two short ones or a long one. And if you remember Steve talking about the current cash strain on NCDOT's budgets, the thought is we might have a better shot of getting some less expensive projects funded this round. That is why you see a few intersection projects as opposed to some of the more expensive projects. So I won't submit all three of those because I don't want to use up three slots. We'll put them in and score them and see what makes the most sense. And we'll get back with you guys, David, and make the final determination. But I wanted to show them all three ways. And then number 12 is US 64 Rosman Highway. There is a project that is funded for some study, and that is the improvements of the intersection there at South Caldwell, North Country Club at 64. That project is funded for study, so that's why this says south of R5882, that's that intersection project. So south of the South Broad North Country Club US 64 intersection, down to the existing, where the existing median on 64 begins, which is Red Sky Knoll, south of Savemore, as you're headed to Rosman. This project's called Access Management. It calls to convert that two-way left turn lane, install a median, make that a four-lane divided, like it is north of town, and include bicycle pedestrian accommodation based on Transylvania County's bike plan and the City of Brevard's bike plan, whatever those call for. We're getting down in the weeds now because I'm not going to have room for all these projects. But then we have Neely Road from... Nope, this is the intersection, I'm sorry. This is the intersection of Neely, Parkview, and Outland. It's that little five-way intersection there on Neely. This one would call for intersection improvement, and it would be convert that misaligned intersection to a neighborhood roundabout, which is a much smaller, it's more like a traffic circle. It's a much smaller neighborhood type treatment that would slow traffic down a little bit at that intersection and help the folks get there through there safer, as well as the kids I've watched cross there on their bikes going to the park. It's kind of scary sometimes.
If the other Neely project got funded, could it be rolled into that?
Yes, it could. But in case the other Neely project doesn't get funded, this is a inexpensive fix for the worst problem on Neely. So. Then you get down here, and they don't have a number by them. These are just four more projects that have been discussed is 64 Rosman Highway from Clement Road, which is where the road narrows down from 4-lane down to the park and ride near 178, just past 178. This project calls to widen that to a divided 4-lane, the whole section. But given, I think, the discussion, given this current cash situation, this is about a 65-ish million-dollar project. Probably not going to get that one this round.
We do have the right-of-way already in that area.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to believe payment costs that much.
I know. Yeah, I'll have to do a little grading, but... And utilities.
Well, I know who you can talk to the flag.
There you go. Yeah. And then we have NC215, Balsam Grove to Sunburst. It's a construct new location, 2-lane road up to Macedonia Church. That is a very expensive project. The last cost estimate I had on that was in the $90 million range. And also, when the environmental document was being developed for that project, they located 2 endangered species in that new location path. So that was kind of the nail in the coffin, I'm afraid, on that one. But there is the potential to submit 215 as a modernization project to potentially improve some of the existing alignment. It would still be an expensive project with the amount of grading that's going to have to be done.
But and this is one that's been floating around.
This one's been around for about 40 years.
In the prioritization tank.
Mm-hmm. It scored a 4 last round, so it doesn't. The score and the cost just don't really.
I think it might continue floating another 40 years.
Could.
The thing is, if that one were eliminated,
we would have a slot to put one into. Because it has gone through all the previous rounds, mm-hmm. and I'm proposing that we don't put it in this round.
Okay.
And put something else in. It doesn't mean it can't go back in the future. It just means let's see if we can get something else, maybe.
But that would have to be at the direction of this board, right?
That would be at this TAC, yes, and this county. Next project down is North Country Club from US 64 out to Barclay. The reason this one didn't get prioritized up higher, it was actually funded at one point, but the city did a bunch of utility work. Then they had to do some resurfacing, and now DOT has a project. At some point, they're going to come in and basically reconstruct that roadbed because it's in such bad shape and resurface it. Am I correct, Lonnie?
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those high impact.
Yes, for the high impact.
Okay,
project.
High impact recall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wouldn't improve the roadway other than just
it
fixing
would
the pavement.
Fix it.
Itself.
So that is why we didn't prioritize that higher because it's going to. There's going to be a significant amount of work done on that.
But that's not going to include biking
pedestrian. No.
Good construction. This was actually a project that was in
Spot 4,
but then the priorities kind of changed for the county, and we were told not to reprioritize that, not to be delivered. Right.
And then the last project down here is...
I think that's combined...
Yes, it is.
That's 9 and 10.
Yes, that's 9 and 10.
And 11, you skipped over.
I skipped over 11 because I got them out of order. Sorry. It's US 276 from Wilson Road to Elm Bend. That would be a modernization project that would bring the lanes up to DOT standards. It would install either a multi-use path or bike lane based on what the Transylvania County Bike Plan, City of Brevard, PED Plan call for, and improve intersections along that corridor.
That's kind of raise it up a little bit there where it floods.
Yeah, right? Yeah. They did address that with the new project.
Yeah. And the hydraulic analysis, just like Wilson Road, having to come up out of the flood line.
The highway floods,
yeah.
Right there in Burke Lane.
Yeah. And that would get some sort of a bike peg connection from town to 270 to Wilson Road, which is close to Hap Simpson, getting closer to Hap Simpson.
Mm-hmm. Somewhat of a loop. I mean,
somebody's going to go back into town.
Anyway, yeah. So that's what we have. David? These need to go to your council pretty soon because the RPO will vote on them the fourth Thursday of February as a draft list, and then we will finalize that in March because I have to have them all submitted and in by the end of April. So we got some time. I mean, and even after February, I can make changes. I can make changes up to April, but I need to get something for my board to vote on so we can, because I don't want to be waiting until the last week to submit projects and something happen on the website and it could, yeah.
I don't know. Money amounts signed for these projects? You know how much they're going to cost?
Some of them we have a ballpark idea, but we didn't on all of them. That's why I didn't show any costs, because I didn't think it was fair to show costs on some and not others if we didn't know what the others would cost.
When will we have those rough numbers?
I'm working on them. I'm trying to get them done.
I mean, is that tomorrow or
next week? Next week.
Yeah, next week. Okay. Should be that we'll
have it. I'm saying next week.
So when we meet, we'll have numbers.
Yeah. Based on your experience and time in working with the state government, how many of these projects realistically have some hope of being actually built within the next 10 years?
Well, let's just narrow that down even more. This process, we'll submit the projects now, and the final improvement plan, the state transportation improvement plan, that will be a result of this process will come out. The draft will come out in January or February of 2022. The Board of Transportation will then adopt that document in the summer of 2022. And that's when these would be programmed from the next 10, potentially the next 10 years out. Any of these that get selected. I would say in this round, realistically, we might get one or two. Potentially. Yeah. Maybe.
Unless our legislators come up with a lot more money. It's the funding, current funding situation.
So I interpret that to say in the next 10 years we might get two of them. Might get two of them.
Right. Right now there's three funded that should start construction in the next 2 to 4 years. And be so those
fully
will be
funded or be
fully. Fully to the best of our knowledge funded, yeah. That's the Asheville Highway project from the Caldwell Street split back to Fortune Cove Road. That's going to be putting in that median. And then that's the Pisgah Forest intersection and Wilson Road. Those three. We got all three of those in spot four, which is two cycles before, and that was a big haul. That was a really big haul for the county. So that's about, it's over $100 million, I'd say, by the time it's all done, don't you think?
Yeah.
See you right there.
Yeah. So over $100 million we got funded in that one round. So there'll be some lean years after that, but that's why we prioritize them, what's important.
Sure. Now that Wilson Road project is going to be a heck of a project.
Yes, it will.
There's going to be a lot of cutting down on that.
Really, any of our roads wind up having a lot of impacts. In the mountains, I mean, there's just no, you just can't get around it.
Yeah.
I think it would behoove us to have a meeting as soon as we get the figures on cost.
Okay.
And just have a meeting just for the prioritization of these projects where we make sure we get them.
Yeah, we talked. I talked with Kate and Jason about the timelines. So yeah. You'll have the numbers next week. Thank you. I leave Wednesday and will be out at a state meeting Wednesday, Thursday, Friday next week. So, when do you think you want to meet? Tuesday night, the 21st, I'm in Marshall. 6 o'clock.
Excuse me, good night for everybody. I think it's pretty well. How's the 28th of January? Did I give you time in 2 weeks?
We have a conflict with the Cedar Mountain Small Area Planning Committee.
Okay.
How about Monday? Could you do Monday night? 27th?
That's the
work commission meeting.
Never mind.
Okay.
Thursday night? Well, I can't Thursday. Well, I can if it's at 7. Yeah, if you do it at 7 Thursday, I can do it.
What Thursday is that?
30th
and 30th, yeah, that one. How's that for everybody? Okay. I'm going to be here. I'll be here. Look up the list.
Can you write your wishes down?
Mm-hmm.
Mark up the list for me.
Okay. So, January 30th at 7 here, we will prioritize this. So everybody look at it and have their opinions on what's what, and make sure we have a see. None of these, some of these were submitted before and didn't get, so it'd be nice to have a list of that to see how we did on the others and not jump around putting other projects in that have been submitted, you know.
Oh, okay.
So a little continuity in what we want.
So you don't want to see the ones that are not...
Oh, yeah, we do. Some of them may outrank the others. Because some of them have been put in, I think, before. Like,
all of them are on here.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they're all on here.
Okay, so they are there.
Yeah.
But what I want to see is how we rank it.
Oof.
Then, if we have any record of that.
The score is going to be different this time, isn't it?
Yes, for the modernization criteria.
So it's going to be different criteria. Okay, then that probably wouldn't work, would it?
No.
Okay.
Wouldn't hurt to see it.
Yeah.
Some type of historical.
You want to see the scores? The scores is what you want, the previous scores?
Yeah, to see how they did.
Okay, I can show you the spot 5 results for those projects that have already gone through. Yeah. Yeah. Because we didn't go way into the weeds about how these things are scored, but they get their data-driven score, and then they're scaled across the state. Well, the ones in our region are scaled across our 17-county region. So the lowest is a 0, and the highest is 100, and then so the raw score, it still has room to fluctuate, even though what we show you, they're up. Does that make sense?
But it gives you an idea.
The raw score will give you an idea. It won't show you how it's going to scale against the new projects that are being submitted. Is kind of where I'm going with that. Because other counties are submitting other projects. I mean, Allegheny County, Burke, and all those. So they compete with us. So.
Okay. That's good. January 3rd. Okay. I have that plan update.
Everybody's glassy out after us.
So tonight I really just wanted to give you an update that it has been adopted by the Board of Commissioners since our last meeting. Mark, would you mind give a quick update since you're the director I don't know the process of it. At our next meeting, once we went over Vicki's presentation tonight, I'll bring it and kind of go through some of the projects with it, but just to update y'all on what it looks like. was adopted.
That's a big thing, is commission to adopt it. Mm-hmm. It's adopted, and that's what we, that's what our goal was, anyway. Well, I guess this is Steve again, DOT project update.
Okay,
my
voice is back. Okay. Some of these we've already heard Vicki talked about, as far as our ongoing projects that are in development that we're working on designs. Wilson Road, we're looking to go to construction in the fall of 2022. Let's see, the intersection improvement projects there at Crystal Forest, looking to go to construction in the fall of next year of 2021. And you'll notice some of y'all have been following these dates for a while. Some of these dates have shifted as a result of our funding issues that we're having. The US 276 Asheville Highway, the access management project, going to construction in the fall of next year. So both that Pisgah Forest intersection project and the access management project will be constructed at the same time. We'll just mess up the entire corridor. And let's see, the projects that were out, something I didn't cover in the STIP presentation. The STIP is, just to avoid confusing things, the STIP is divided into two sections. The first 6 years is called the deliverable STIP, and that means that there is money allocated for all portions of that project. So the design, the right-of-way acquisition, and the construction. The projects that are out in the next 4 years, which makes up the next 4 years, the last 4 years of that 10-year window of the STIP, is called the developmental STIP. And in this round of prioritization, we actually had, in Transylvania County, we had three projects that went into the developmental STIP, and that was the intersection project there at Roslyn Highway, South Caldwell, and Broad, that Vicki mentioned. Let's see, there was one in Roslyn, 178, going from downtown towards South Carolina.
That's the one.
And no, they're off now.
Did they
26? And let me just say. And then let's see. There was one more. Oh, I'm counting the one that there was a flat project, US 276, going up into the forest. From Pisgah Forest intersection up to Avery Creek. All those have been suspended. Okay, so there's no work going on those at all right now. We do hope that to get those activated again as funding becomes available.
That's a section going from the main intersection of Pisgah
Forest. From Dolly's to Avery Creek.
To the horse stables?
Yeah. There's plan is to widen that to a three-lane section with bike facilities.
Okay, so that will be eventually picked back up? So
we're hoping, yes.
Okay.
That's the plan. So at one time, all projects in Transylvania County were on hold for a short amount of time.
Wasn't there some discussion of the Forest Service?
That's another project.
Different project?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Same looking?
Well, he'd like to read.
Can you mention the new roundabout 64 and Railroad Avenue Bridge?
Railroad Avenue Bridge, that's actually a city project. The DOT doesn't have anything to do with that, so I can't give you an update on that. Just because we're not involved.
We're going to have the contract soon.
Yeah, it's supposed to let in the next couple of months, I think.
Yeah.
I did check that.
So that's Railroad Avenue, would be a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I like the bridge.
Mm-hmm. That new vehicle bridge. Mm-hmm. Next to the pedestrian.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's a city managed project.
Sure.
And the roundabout. From
which roundabout?
For the Pusa Loop.
Dixon River Connector?
Yeah. We're going to let Lonnie cover the construction stuff just to put him on the spot here.
He's here. We got to let him do so.
Yeah, we primarily only have one major construction project underway now. And most of y'all probably know that
The detour has been removed and the roundabout is somewhat open. The through lane on Acushnet Road portion is. And I told some folks a few months ago that if you don't have experience driving roundabout, this is a good time to get some experience. You only have to go through half of it, and you can kind of get the feel of it. It's a roundabout light.
Maybe we should project some vehicles coming from the other areas.
So that project will continue the construction probably in the spring. The portion or the leg, if you go from that roundabout over to 64 where the Dollar General is, that part will open up in the spring, but the other leg going on around to Acushnet Credit Union of 276-64, that one is going to be delayed somewhat because there's going to be a roundabout at that intersection, and that roundabout is under design currently. So that leg will continue to be closed, but the other leg will be open sometime this spring.
That's about
30 minutes.
Is it? Just everywhere. Steve, did the 280 thing go into feasibility study? Do I recall that? Yes, we requested one. Do you know the status of it, Troy? Yeah, we haven't seen any results from that yet. But, our feasibility studies unit is under some financial restraints as far as how much money they can spend for
moving. We did that to try to get it a little further along, as I recall.
Get it further along, be able to show the TAC what the impacts are going to be there, and get a better cost estimate. Those are the goals of an express design. So.
Also, the 64 from this report out is in a feasibility study as well, right?
Hmm?
64? Yeah, from this report going to Hamilton
Hill. That's what I'm aware of.
Because we gave input to Wanda probably 2-3 months ago.
Yeah, I don't think that's been assigned. So.
That's not one I'm even familiar with.
From Hamilton Hill, from this report?
That's not one that I'm familiar with.
But I know for some portion of it is. Anyway, give me the confusion.
Do you want to talk about the I-26 bridges, even though they're not in Transylvania County?
Which part?
The I-26 bridges, the Green River Bridge.
As you go into South Carolina or into Polk County, right before the county line, the Green River bridges, the various bridges, the project's going to be let in June. Right now, there are two bridges, and they are what is considered functionally obsolete, which means the lane width, or primarily the shoulder widths, are not up to current standards. And so what's going to happen is, instead of two bridges, they're going to become one bridge, and the section in between the two bridges will be built in, and then we'll be able to get wider shoulders, and the bridge decks are going to be replaced. So when it's all done, you'll have a nice wide, it'll still be two lanes each direction, but you'll have nice wide shoulders on those bridges as you go through there. So that's going to be starting in June of this year.
That's a big project.
We've got some middles.
I think that's all from us, Dave.
Okay. Anybody on the board, everything else on business? If not, I'll go in a different order. Anybody in the public have any comments they need to make, like to make, pertaining to this? Yes, Carol.
Well, I got some concerns. I bet you can't guess what they are. One thing I think with the development of the Wilson improvement on the Wilson Road is going to be an asset to us, particularly those of us who need to get around the yard. One of the things that's got me worried is we're going to have the completion sometime of the bike path from Hensonville there's a forest. Conservative Carolina has gotten an 80% grant, I think it's $6 million to acquire the easement, and they're in the process of getting an extra 20%, raising the funds for that, and then the money's for improving the path. Am I telling you right? Were you in on that same meeting?
No, we didn't know anything about
that. Okay, my concern is that we're going to increase the number of bicycles using Wilson Road. And that intersection of Wilson Road and 276 is not the safest thing in the world, particularly, I think, for bicycles. People come across that hill pretty fast. And I'm also concerned about tractor and trailers coming from a new Dollar General store back onto 276. They're probably at some time going across the lane to get the trailer up on the road. And if we've got bicyclists or even cars coming down to meet them, the bicyclists would be at risk because there's not much of a shelter for them to pull off to. It's over the bank. So I've got concerns about taking an update road development and putting it with a one that's, 50 years old? That's one of my concerns there, is the safety along with the potential development of the Dollar General store. My biggest one, though I have to think about it, is the flood. Flood, 100-year flood status that we have for your codes that you're having to go by. I went back online and started looking at research. And let's see, I've got some information here. Would you mind passing it out to the participants here? I've got some more here too, Mike. Okay. What I did is I went online and looked for 500-year floods that were in our general area. One time I heard that we had 3 500-year floods in 1 year in the United States. And I knew one of them was in Columbia. So I got the facts about that. And before you start thumbing through here, let's look at my chart I've got there. I went back and looked at the 1916 flood, which is considered our base level, I guess, for mapping. And it was a case of two storm systems, two tropical storms, that came one after the other. The first one dropped 5 inches in about a two-day time, and then was followed by a second one that had nearly 15 inches of rain. And I looked at that, and some of you got any idea what I thought about those figures? Where did they collect the water? It was in Brevard. Where is our heaviest rainfall?
In Brevard.
In the headwater. In the headwater. And Lonnie might be able to tell us this. How many paved roads did we have in 1916?
Much fewer than we do now.
Then I got to looking at the population. It's about one-fifth of what we have now. So it occurred to me that if you look at impermeable soil, we had lots of it, more so than we have now. So if we're not keeping up somehow or another with the potential rainfall in a 100-year storm, we're going to have more damage. One of the things I've been watching is the river banks, Prince Bob River. Have you noticed how many trees are leaning over the water? How many of them have gone in or lodged there? About the dam that we had down at Little River. That
in my opinion, is a symptom of the increasing velocity and its increasing lane depth that we're getting. So we're dealing with codes that are based on a historic event, not the events that are happening now and are predicted to continue for the next 30 years or longer. Maybe the rest of our lives, or the next 100 years anyway. So that makes it more complicated to plan for roads, for housing, for safety. And I think we need to start advocating for keeping up to date with the changes we're seeing. I heard on 60 Minutes Sunday night, they interviewed a guy that had worked on a UN report on flooding. He's from Princeton. And he said, you know, what we're about to see is 100-year floods annually because of the increased moisture in the atmosphere, the number of heavy storms that we're getting. Now, what I did, I compared it to Columbia. Sure enough, I was right. Columbia had, I thought it was a 500-year flood, but what I read is that they didn't even know how to measure or calculate what it was because it spread from Columbia all the way to the ocean. So in some areas, it's very heavy, 20 inches in 24 hours. Some areas, it was less than that, of course. And then the one that really startled me was the one in Atlanta. They had 20 inches in 24 hours. But it covered a good bit of central Georgia. And I think one of these, the one in Columbia, they were estimating $1.4 billion in damage. So where we are, we're looking at just a minor issue and a larger issue that I think that we're facing. How are we going to deal with the future with yesterday's case? We've got to think of, and I think we're going to have to advocate with the state to change, let us change the code, maybe go to a 500-year flood code. Actually, I read that online. It's getting to the point where we need to raise our codes for construction, roads, and so forth. So, I'm thinking that the flood of 1916 is not really representative of what we can expect, period. We've changed. It's going to be more rapid, and it's going to be more rain. Charlie Davis, my neighbor, Alcord Road, used to tell me about the floods of 1916, and he said, you know what the most dangerous, the most hazardous part of it was the flood floods.
Landslide.
And up to 76, he pointed out 4 or 5 where they blocked the road. So I think as a planning board and as a transportation board, we need to start trying to put pressure, trying to advocate, make our case for having data that is appropriate to the reality we're facing now and what is being forecast. Now, a lot of people say, no, don't do that. Would you rather hear the no's or suffer the consequences if we have a 100-year flood? It's going to affect all of us, not just Dollar General Store. And by the way, anybody know how much rain falls on 1 acre with 1 inch of rain? Anybody? Don't say Bob, you know, I know you. I'll ask you a question, Bob. How many acres are in the watershed on Hobson Branch?
Well, it goes all the way up towards the Inchinest Tower up there, so there'd be
There's usually several hundred acres.
It's 2,300.
And
2,300, I believe.
2,300 in that watershed.
That's
right. Acre inch is 17,140 gallons of water. So if you have a 2-inch rain, which I hope you don't have, but if you have a 1-inch rain, multiply that by 17,000 gallons of water. So a lot of water coming down to the proposed building of the Dollar Gallon store. I'm thinking about buying the film Come Hell and High Water. How many of you seen it, Matt? I think I might send it to him. That is really an eye-opener. The one problem I see with it is that Atlanta, Columbia, and our 100-year flood was not confined to Prince William County. It was regional. Long distance. Two river systems. So that means that we can't rely on our neighbors as much as we think we can. It's going to be downeasters that'll have to come and help us, I guess. But that has a lot of consequences for what y'all do. And I think it's time to take seriously and also maybe go back to Dollar General and say, would you want 17,000 gallons of water in your backyard at one time from 600 acres or whatever? But 2,300, buddy? Okay, that's a lot of water. So that's what I'm getting here. And then these are some of the information off of both Atlanta and Columbia. And I think it's potentially possible to happen here. And I think it's better to plan for it and not need it than it is to need it and not have it. So that's my spiel. Thank you.
Thank you, Gerald.
Okay, anybody else have anything?
Okay. Hi, y'all. Do you mind saying?
Did you read your last pair at last week? Your reading glasses?
They're a mess. Yeah.
I got them all over.
Like this. So, my name is Elizabeth Thompson.
So,
I actually.
Who are you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My name is Elizabeth Thompson. I spoke at the last planning board meeting, so some a couple of things I'm going to refer to from that are not going to make sense to the transportation folks, so I apologize. If you recall, I talked about the economic situation of having a Dollar General, how it adversely affected one of the businesses on 276 when I said she lost over $30,000 the first year that Dollar General was open. And I talked to her again, and she told me that at the moment Dollar General opened, she had 8.5 employees, and of course they're getting paid way more than Dollar General pays their employees. What would constitute a living wage with the Living Wage Coalition? She now has 2.5 employees. 8.5 to 2.5, and she works 6 days a week, so she is really 3.5, including herself, it's more than that. So that's a detriment. The other thing is DJ is cutting back, Dollar General is cutting back the hours on their employees at the CL store. I just heard that a couple of days ago. But I really want to talk about transportation. My biggest concern, just like Carol, by the way, Charlie Davis was my grandfather, regarding the landslides. My concern about Becky Mountain is that it didn't fall under the requirement of needing a study, a traffic study. And I don't know what those parameters are. I talked to Geary, the Department of Transportation guy, the superintendent, or something you know I'm talking about. Is it Gary Owen or Owen or something like that?
Carl Owen.
Oh, Carl, sorry.
Yes, he worked in my
Carl Owen. Yes. So I talked to him today because of our Neo Dollar and the Hollow signs being removed by the Department of Transportation. So I got that figured out. But anyway, he said that this particular Dollar General, the location of the drive into the parking lot didn't constitute a need for a traffic study. And I find that kind of alarming. So I'm wondering if I can ask you guys to consider doing some sort of traffic study. I mean, I know it's the Department of Transportation at the North Carolina, you know, at the state level. But, I mean, you could just put a camera on top of Duck Pond Pottery that has a sensor thing. You would be able to see the number of people who pass. I was actually at Duck Pond Pottery last night after our meeting that we were here for the commissioner's meeting. And I watched, and this is dark, I watched a massive truck, like one of those big Ford 2050, that you call them. Anyway, it passed. It started passing before the passing lane in the dark. And I said, "Wow, Nick." He's like, "Yeah, that's my day all day long, is watching people pass too soon, and then they're going by Becky Mountain, and then if this construction happens, then there's another entrance. Then you add summer camp, cyclists, tourists." Tracker trailers and people doing, you know, crazy maneuvers, people driving too slow. And I am kind of like, Carol, you know, I adopted my daughter when she was 13, and she was a real pain, and she got into a lot of trouble, and I constantly was trying to explain to her, please don't do this, this is why, and I would give her all the reasons, and she would still go do it. And she'd come back later and say, Mom, you know, you were right. And I said, yeah, honey, but I don't want to be right after the fact. I want to be right before. So what I'm trying to say is, let's be right about this traffic issue and not have to have a fatality in order to decide that, hey, maybe this wasn't a good idea. And I feel the same way also about the flooding. The only other thing that I want to say, I just only want to speak about transportation since y'all are here. I'll not bore you about the other things regarding building ordinances. He mentioned the tractor trailers. It really is a serious issue. And in the 54 years that I've been going up and down that road, I've never met a tractor trailer in a curve until 2 weeks before Christmas. And it was the last curve before you get to the elementary school. And luckily, they were heading out, and I was heading to the airport to drop my sister off. So it was just at the moment that the trailer was riding itself back like this instead of coming into the curb. So if I'd gotten there like 3 seconds earlier, there would have been a collision because there's a mountain right here and there's no shoulder. Well, there is a shoulder. You just go into, you drop down 2 feet. And that's what I did. I went down. I have an element, so I'm high up. So I didn't damage the car or anything. But I had to leave my lane halfway. Since we started our movement, A Dollar in the Holler, we have 1,000 people on our Facebook page, and people are starting to share all their near misses. And a lot of their near misses are in curves, and they involve trucks with long trailers or the big trucker trailers. So my recommendation, and I don't know how you can make this happen as a Transportation Advisory Council, is to consider putting a moratorium on the 63-foot long trailers. Because they're going to kill somebody. I don't think this Dollar General is going to happen, so I'm not going to say there's going to be more tractor trailers. But if it were to happen, in my worst nightmare, we can't have a 63-foot. We just can't. We can't do that. We can't do that to the residents. We can't do it to the wildlife. We need to use this. It's a country road. It's not even the proper width for DOT requirements, right? There's certain parts where there's not enough of a shoulder. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody on either board have any comments they would like to make? Okay. If you might have noticed, one of the projects.
I think it's great that the two boards see what's going on with what's going on with transportation and planning and all that, because the two are so closely linked together. I think it was great that we had a joint meeting.
And I was just going to say what you said about those curves, that is one of the projects that has popped up on this here. So what you said will be taken into consideration. Don't know how it'll work or how money, but Dr. Folger's also brought the same, he's not here tonight, brought the same thing up in the past.
Yeah, so I mean, I was aware of the project because it's, is it like the 20-year plan or something? Like, I mean, where are we in that? As far as whether or not that's
going to happen. Well, the problem, of course, is the funding.
Right.
And we've got those big projects that they mentioned, and then these others, we're hoping to get one or two more this next time. But it's unless something really changes, that may be about all we get. Unless Tom, you're later, please.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Go ahead.
Do you have time for another comment?
Oh, sure. Sure.
My name is Christy Blakely, and Lonnie, you had to talk yesterday. Thank you. And contrary to popular belief, this Dollar General project is not what we all want to spend our time talking about all the time, but. I love listening to what you all had to say today regarding transportation and the improvements and how those investments are so valuable to the community. And something that has had me really kind of invigorated about the Dollar General project from the beginning is that we just experienced that bridge number 12 replacement on Becky Mountain Road over Hogshead Creek this summer. And had it not been for that bridge project, I don't think many of us would have been able to really tune into what's going on there. But what we came to learn about it is, you know, the road wasn't really raised, but the culvert under the road was improved. It was expanded to really allow better floodwaters down into these fields. Along Hogshead Creek, that in a flood event, when the floodway is moving and water can't get down under 276 yet, it holds there. Kind of a natural stormwater basin, and we even saw this, you know, after the one day rain this week. And I guess the question I have for you all is a little bit hypothetical. We know that even though the bridge was just replaced, brand new bridge, that flooding still happens there, and there are many times that the flood water comes up right to the bridge, and someone will be out there waiting to put signs out. It doesn't breach, but then there's also been some times that it still does flood over the bridge. So I just wonder, from like the transportation side, and also that we just did this investment, is there an opportunity to take a step back about this proposed project and really evaluate, is it going to cause wear and tear on that brand new bridge that wasn't anticipated? Because from what I've read about the scope of the bridge project and the different narratives, DOT did not anticipate that there would be any other development projects in this area. And so I thought that was interesting. I think maybe the better question would be, had the Dollar General gone in first, raised up this site, diverted floodwater, would the scope of the bridge project have changed? Would it maybe have needed to be raised or whatnot? So at the sake of sounding like I'm repeating myself, I guess I just wonder if there is an opportunity to weigh the pros and cons of bringing a business in, because they might be able to check in all the boxes, but is it at the risk of additional wear and tear from flooding, additional flooding on Becky Mountain Road, and possibly erosion and flooding over 276? And that's where I'll leave that.
Thank you. Everybody else from the audience? So I want to say thank you for adding me to the Transportation Advisory Committee as the pedestrian and bicycle advocate. And although I've been in this position about 6 months, my first meeting, and what I want to point out to everybody here is that I'm a mountain biker, a road biker, and a gravel biker. So what I've been doing for the last 2 years here in Brevard since we moved, and actually I've been coming down for 17 years riding, is really just kind of assessing all the different roads, whether they be paved, gravel, bike path, mountain bike trails, getting an assessment just on my own as kind of, you know, kind of like Google Maps. They go out, they send a car out there just to kind of analyze, check it, see what it's like for me. And then also I've been working on building the relationships with the park managers, both from Pisgah and DuPont, as well as all the major bike clubs in the area, just to establish that communication link, to get an understanding, you know, what are their concerns, what are their needs, what are their challenges, but also then adding in my own opinion to it. Also, I'm one of the coaches for the new Brevard Youth Cycling Association, and we have 45 kids out there. That is kind of cool because it's a clean sheet of paper to teach them proper riding etiquette, whether it's on the road, on the trail, wherever they go. And really, part of what I'm really analyzing is every time I ride my bike down the road, is taking a look to say, you know, what's best for the safety of all users, and assessing it not just from, say, the road cycling groups who, you know, just have pleasure rides, but to the mountain bikers that want to get to a trailhead that don't want to necessarily get in their car and drive there. And then looking at families, which frankly to me is the best thing that I ever see, is when you get out there and you see families riding together, you know, and just doing that assessment. But I just want to at least point out that this is something that I'm doing. So I think it's a great benefit to the overall Transportation Advisory Committee, because also I work as a business development director in the high-tech electronics field. So I live here because of my choice to live in this environment. I told David on the way over, I checked off 175 days on the bicycle last year. All right. And to me, that's kind of my gauge, that I get to go out at lunch because I work from a home office. I want to get out and go explore the environment and get to see what's going on. So, you know, as I mentioned to Vicky, like that one intersection, I'm on all the time because it's one of my regular loops that I do, say, over lunch or right after work, to say there's a lot of pieces that are good. This section is not so good. So part of what I'm trying to do is, you know, assess all these different areas to say we don't have to build a bike path, you know, completely separate along a long stretch of road, right, but this one section. So we mentioned the Dollar area. All right. There's a link really from where Wilson Road to Barclay Road. Mm-hmm. All right, it's about a 1 mile stretch. Mm-hmm. That's an area where, frankly, if you just said, let me take that area a little bit at a time, add some shoulder, add some improvement, now I can get from Wilson to Barclay. Now I have a safe place to ride. Because a bike rider around here, they do not want to ride on 64 or 276 or 280. All right? They're looking for all those alternative roads. But some ways you just have to have that one little stretch. And frankly, it scares the hell out of you when you're riding, and I'm an experienced rider, and those are the areas that, you know, we talk about traffic crossing, you know, and trying to pass. A lot of people do a good job of that, but at the same time, you say it's dangerous for everybody involved. So just want to point out that that's kind of one of the things that I've been working on, and I'm hoping to add that level of value to some of the decision making. So thanks for having me.
Well, I'd just like to say thank you to the planning board for meeting with us. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And
hope that some of us will come to some planning board meetings and see what you all think. I want to read it for you. Anyway, we're going to mention something about Blue Zone.
Yeah, so there's going to be a. There's going to be a. Is everyone familiar with what Blue Zones is already? And if not, so they are having a presentation from their policy experts talking about the built environment. And this project is mainly focused in Brevard. They were the community that was awarded as a Blue Zone community. But the goal is to hopefully have a cohesive bridge with some county projects if there's a chance to. So that's January 21st at 3. More coming up. But let me check my note real quick. At when?
3-6.
Okay. I think maybe just the built environment section was at 3. Yeah. Yeah, 3 o'clock in the Rogo room of the library, if you want to learn more about that.
Yeah, where it really affects our transportation is with these bypass and with these greenways for people to hike, walk when they're in town, not to have to go all the way to the forest, and especially for the older folks that don't want to be climbing mountains, they can walk on a more level area. And that's where it really comes into the transportation deal. Anybody else have any?
I have a question.
Sure.
My name is Scott Sullivan. Does the Transportation Advisory Committee have numbers to what the damage is from flood water yearly?
On roads, one of them would probably have it for Transylvania somehow, and be in the maintenance area.
From the when we do the when we have an event that causes damage to the road.
Yeah, do you know how much that costs our county for you?
Yes, we can get those numbers. I don't know it.
You don't know it off
head. No.
Okay. So have you ever considered like a community initiated assessment of the FEMA floodplain? Mm-hmm. Is that an option that we would consider? Is there an associated cost to flood damage that we want to avoid in the future?
I want to step in. This is not my area, but I want to step in here. The Transylvania County doesn't have any roads that they're required to maintain. They're all on the state network, unless they're within the city of Brevard's network.
Okay.
So North Carolina counties don't have road maintenance fees. So
okay.
The damage is done for floodwaters on the state network is part of the money
state.
We're talking
yeah.
about
yeah.
The increased storm costs, storm recovery costs. So the flooding, any road damage flooding in Brevard is taken, I mean, in Transylvania County is taken care of
okay.
by the state DOT.
I've read that the FEMA say that they know it's wrong, but they can't really adjust it. They don't have the budget for it. So the onus is on us as a community to assess that and change that. I know that FEMA has like a community initiated changes that we can make if we think that our flood data is creating a cost for our state or for our community. I don't know how it works, but I just want to bring that up. And
I think as far as damage and mitigating the damage, possibility of damage, if you would check with emergency management here in the county, they have a plan, and a lot of the plan that them and the region and the state has is preventing damage from floods. That's where certain areas of zoning where you can't build and certain floodplains, flood range,
yeah.
and things like that. As far as updating these maps,
yeah.
I think the federal government does them, and they did one not too long ago, but I don't know that whatever became the name of the super high.
So there's never a world where we would initiate that assessment as a community if we see damage from floods. That's not a thing.
I think a lot of things here and Carroll Farms, a lot of it is up to the landowner on problems they have with the flooding. And I know they were working on a field near Rosman that had washed out in a flood. And I'm assuming your group used to do a lot of that. They were trying to get the river where it wouldn't hit the produce field full of tomatoes again.
Right.
But Bob worked for Fall of Arc. I mean, that has a lot to do with cropland issues. And but as far as the data, I think Carol sounds like things are changing.
Yeah, I would love to know the amount of money that we spend on, to fix our roads from flood damage, and just so that we can put a cost. And maybe this is stuff that you guys have already figured out, but every time we develop in a flood plain or we displace more flood water, and that's damaging our roads and costing our state, costing our communities. And I know that on FEMA's website, there's a community-initiated assessment change the maps, but maybe that's not something that pertains to this.
Check with emergency body. Management here in the county, and
okay.
I think they even have a county number here, and see what they have, because they have a big book with different things that they've assessed and studied and things like that. In fact, they probably people to help us with it at one time. So,
thank you. Yeah,
pre-planning. All departments will probably hire on different departments. We pre-plan for floods. Like if one of this road's flooded, in fact, I'm on a fire department. This road's flooded,
yeah.
And we can't get somewhere. We know which department's going to handle that area, and then vice versa, because the departments know when there's flood what to do.
Yeah.
And that's why you see some of the big tall trucks is where they can go through water.
Yeah.
The only thing is we can just keep people out of it.
It does, yeah, exactly. It doesn't take much to shut this county down with water, you know.
Sure,
I live on Island Port, and you know, it doesn't take much. So.
Oh yeah, all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure you got good.
But, yeah, I just wanted to see if you guys were able to assess that financially, and I guess I was parking up the wrong tree. So,
emergency management, and they would have the statistic on if there was a major flood that they declared a disaster area, and the departments got reimbursed for whatever they spent or their funds that they utilized for that incident, and they should have records of that. And that was I don't know, I can't remember when there was one they declared a disaster area. It's usually snow, ice, whatever. But first
management
be one to talk to on that.
All right. Well, thank you for the information. Okay. Thank you for your time.
David, comments? As far as we do, as DOT, we do plan that. FEMA streams are studied or unstudied. The ones that are studied, they've actually gone out, surveyed it, shot actual elevations. We have that information. You're talking about flooding different bridges. If the DOT is replacing a structure on a road that's not studied, we have to perform that study. We bring all those maps up to date, and we turn all that information over to FEMA floodplain map.
Okay.
So these are being done daily across the state. Eventually, it'll all get done.
Yeah.
And different projects that's required. That's where our low mars are, our pro mars. And then you see a lot of bridges. You see the road, and all of a sudden you see this big bridge, and you come back down, just like on Wilson Road. Well, that's so that bridge doesn't go in water based on a certain year flood.
Yeah.
Now, if we were to build that on a 1,000-year flood, the bridge would be like 3 miles long. So it's all it's all based on a design year, and some of our bridges, rural roads, are just wood bridges that overtop, and we know that. And it's just
there is a community-initiated adjustment that can be made. So.
So are you saying that there was a Lomar on that Hawks at Road Bridge?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Just a very quick one here, and maybe this is just to the general population. This I noticed in the paper the other day, the Governor's Highway Safety Program accepting grant applications for eligible projects that would advance traffic safety in North Carolina. I don't know if anybody else saw that.
Somehow it can be passive, so helmets and things like that for youth.
It has a class for them. Just curious what y'all would consider as an entity that would apply for this grant. But I don't see it as.
What's the grant again? I'm sorry.
Well, it's good for anywhere from $20,000 to $1 million.
What was the grant? I didn't hear what it is.
Governor's Highway Safety Program.
General law enforcement, but it can be.
It's part of law enforcement. Yeah, but the deadline is January 31st for any application. So, can anybody suggest an entity? Maybe it's Blue Zones, or come up with something quick. Can it be a city? I don't know if it can be a city agency or.
We should get an idea to look at it. We need everything we can get.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. If it's signage, marking, I mean, it seems to me that bicycle safety is definitely something clearly on my plate to take a look at. Pedestrian.
At one time, one of where the. Sylvan Sport was a driving range where people could take the kids out to learn to drive and stop signs and stuff. They also had bicycle things under the Governor's Highway Safety paid for some of that. And then for you can get a grant for helmets and things like that.
Yeah.
The safe routes to school is probably
it's active routes to school.
Safe routes to school.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Mac, maybe you and I can talk after the meeting afterwards. Take a look because hey, it looks like some free money. Maybe we can figure out quickly to come up with a concept and get something towards a bike path or whatever.
Yeah.
Good. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. Yes.
And show this again. I'm Debbie Wallace, and that's my house. And I know this is kind of weird, but I want to invite all of y'all to come look at this site, come do it. The other people on Mill Cove Road, including my husband and Alan, probably kill me, but come, walk down Mill Cove Road, walk down Reeves Road, look at it. And the problem that we're worried about, and living there, I've seen a lot of floods, and I've been stuck back there a couple times, is you've got this new bridge, and you've got this old culvert, and floodwaters come in that way, and they also come down. And today, I walked around the whole cove, and there are 14 different streams that feed into Hogshead Creek, just in this one, coming down from Rich and Becky Mountain. So, a really good time to visit is after a big rainstorm, when the sound of the water rushing down the mountain is pretty amazing. But I invite you to come and see what we're talking about, and see the what we're worried about. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I thank everybody for coming, and I hear a motion to adjourn. I suppose both of them.
Second.
Somebody else can plan for it.
Okay.
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Okay. On the transportation advisory board.
So moved.
So moved. Second. Okay. All in favor?
Aye. Aye. Good job.
I trusted the board.
Well, there. actually, the one, do you know where